Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. So excited to be with you this evening. Do hope everyone had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Looking forward to our conversation this evening. I'd like to start this evening by spending just a moment in a review of the first three principles of intrinsic validation, just so we're up to speed. Then I would like to open this up for a moment to anyone who would like to share an experience they've had with this. And then I've got some emails that I'd like to address that have been sent this week. And then I'd like to finish up by going through the last few principles of intrinsic validation. So let's start with a quick review. Everybody have your paper and pencil handy and ready to rock and roll? Let's break it out so we can take some notes. First of all, we'd like to welcome everyone who's here for the first time. Last week we just started over fresh with the six qualities of an intentional creator. You haven't missed too much, so hang in there with the notes in this review, and then you'll be up to speed with us. One, a principle. We know that everyone has a wall of resistance. I'll call it a wall of suspicion and hate, which they've built around their hearts. We know everybody has one. We know it's been measured. We know that on average, a person holds back 40% of their cooperation and productivity behind that wall until we value them as a human being, create a safe place for them, so their wall can come down. No more need for a wall. Cooperation, productivity, flood out. Two, we know that we take down this wall with two tools. One is intuition, which is our inner sense of knowing. And two is our empathy, being on someone else's path. This is an opportunity for us to take all of those life experiences that we've been dragging around in that sack. And last week I invited everyone to go back and listen to that Chicago Dream again. All those things we've been dragging around, those things we've done or been done to us, those things we just haven't been able to let go. And to take those and ask ourselves that one question, I wonder if anyone else has had a similar experience. And we stop reflecting on dragging the sack. We start owning it, putting it in our heart, and we begin focusing on another person. That is our empathy, using our life experiences. And I mentioned to you last week that some of your richest, most valuable assets are your life experiences. Heretofore, it's been a source of pain, frustration, maybe even anger. Some things have happened to some on this phone that can never be taken back. You could have lost a limb, lost your health, lost a relationship, lost a fortune. Now, some of those things can be replaced, like a fortune. Some of those things cannot. Very painful experiences. The question is anyone else experiencing this? Because once we begin to focus outside ourselves, we can actually begin to heal. I went into quite a bit of detail last week that you never heal looking inside for answers. Why did that happen to me? Why did she do that? Why did he do that? Why was the economy like that? We can get those answers, but they're really the booby prize. Because we still feel this way when we get the answer. It's letting it go. It's saying, I'm going to use this experience instead of dragging it around like a victim and being victimized by it. I'm going to use it to help me better understand what someone else is suffering. I know what that feels like. I know what that pain feels like. I can see it in their eyes. I can see it in their walk. I can hear it in their words. I know questions I can ask them that nobody else knows, except for someone who's been here. This is a great blessing when we catch the vision of this. Og calls this the greatest secret of success in all ventures. We can live in our little wall. We're getting some noise in the background. If everybody could press *6, that would really be helpful. I can hear someone driving in a car. If you're driving in a car and a cell phone, just press *6, and we'd really appreciate that. Thank you. So we bring these experiences into our life, engrave them on our heart, and begin to focus on other people. Something magical happens. Our divine nature is awakened. We are physiologically built to connect with other human beings. Every everything about our current society, not everything, but much about our current society is about separating us from that connection. But physiologically, we are built to connect with another person. When we begin to do so, our very nature awakens. We begin to heal. Second of all, we begin to become congruent with a power greater than ourselves. I happen to call that power God. That's my conception. That power in partnership, because that power's role is to bless and to bring abundance to the lives of others, and all of a sudden that's my focus too. Now I have a power greater than myself assisting me in working with those people. Now it's very interesting in the field that we're working with right now in Ogmandino. How many struggling with addiction become so defiant and so unwilling to surrender? Yet in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they become to know when they stop drinking, they begin to know this power that can restore them to sanity. And then they do something that is so courageous, so amazing. It would do us all of us, a great service to follow in the path of this third step. Surrender my life and my will to God, as I understand him. To do with as he will. That's surrender. Because God doesn't want us just dying on the vine. He wants us to be a ripe fruit. He wants us to grow, to multiply a hundredfold. It's just sometimes we are unwilling to surrender to what's necessary to become that person. Now, this isn't a Sunday sermon. I just know that power is very real. I've watched it work in people's lives. And intrinsic validation gives us an opportunity to be about a life congruent with that power. Actually focused on someone else. Actually noticing them. Wow. So the very first step of the seven steps of intrinsic validation is we begin to notice. We notice what's important to people. It gives us a framework for that discussion. What's important to this person? Wow, as we talked last week, could it be tattoos that they have? I don't remember if this is in the program or not. I think it is. I talked about the one gentleman at the couples retreat with the crosses on his arms. It was in Iraq. I remember with Ramona and my daughter traveling to a concert in Salt Lake after having dinner, and we were in a taxi, and the driver had her right hand up on the steering wheel, and there was a tattoo right on her wrist, on the front of her wrist. And I noticed it, and I said, "Oh, tell me about your tattoo." And she shared with me. This big smile erupted on her face. "My brother and I are hooked at the hip. He's in West Virginia, and I'm out here." And then she started explaining the parts of the tattoo that represented her brother. Then she tenderly touched it with her left palm and said, "This way, my brother is with me all the time." I thought, wow, that's so important to her. Let us take the time to notice what's important to someone. Corrine shared with us last week when she called and noticed that someone was making tremendous sacrifices to organize a meeting, even though she wasn't going to be able to be there. Just to acknowledge that, got a phone call back right after the email went out, thanking her and opening up, and it turned out to be a great blessing for her in many ways. But what a wonderful thing for us to start doing, to look for something that's good in another person. And then two, to verbalize it. Excuse me, just one moment. Bear with me tonight, I got a little bit of a runny nose. Okay, step number three. After we've noticed what's important to someone and we verbalize it, I've got this on Q&A mode, so if anybody wants to come off and make a comment, just press *6. You'll come off of mute, and we'll be able to hear you. And I'll acknowledge you as soon as I hear you. Thank you. Now, we're saying it. We're verbalizing it because we see more than we say. Third step is we start listening for doors. Doors are verbal hints about what someone is thinking or experiencing. Now, the email that I got this week was directed to this particular measurement. Donna from Chicago, who shared with us 2 weeks ago, sent me an email this week. She basically said, how do you do this with someone who is difficult, even toxic? How do you do that? And I promised her I would share it with the whole group tonight, because there will be times in your life when you'll deal with people who are having a difficult time for whatever reason, and they don't show up healthy. And if it'll test you. It'll test your very fiber, the one who is aware. Og says it in scroll number 6 when he said this. He said, and with this new knowledge, I will also understand and recognize the moods on he on whom I call. I will make allowances for his anger and irritation of today, for he knows not the secret of controlling his mind. I can withstand his arrows and insults, for now I know that tomorrow he will change and be a joy to approach. Many of us are trying to get things done very quickly. We look at intrinsic validation as an opportunity for us to step into someone's world, take down their walls of resistance, share with them what we want to have done, close them, and move on. Og tells us in scroll number 2 that with this we can melt all hearts, like in the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. Just know that in that statement he did not give us a time frame. He just said it can be done. He also told us later in scroll 6 that today he may not buy gold chariots for a penny, but tomorrow he'll sell his house for a tree. We can all have really bad days. Now, I was pretty honest with everybody last week as we talked about this. This can try everyone. The very first answer to Donna's question is this. Whatever you do, make sure you are not the instigator. Make sure you are the one who is noticing the other person and stepping into their world. Be that person. That's the first thing. Agape, translated to the English charity, means to see somebody the way this power that governs abundance, the way God would see them, all-knowing, all the history, all the challenges, all the frustrations. Now that sometimes is frustrating for us because there are things we need to get done. And the fact that someone in that position is having a difficult time can be extremely frustrating, especially in business. They can try us to the edge, and sometimes over the edge. So let us all on the call tonight make the commitment that we will be the one who steps into their world. We will be the one who sees them with agape love. Instead of wanting them to see us and what we're doing and what we're going through and what we're struggling with, let us be the one who sees them. That's the first thing. Second of all, and I love this question, Donna, because intrinsic validation is not about softness. It is about kindness, but it is not about softness. The word is really accuracy. Accuracy. We are stepping into someone's world without an agenda, and without baggage, to find out what's really there. We really want to know. What happens if you hear a door and you step through and you begin to create a safe place and, Donna, you discover that you're dealing with a rattlesnake? Do you put the rattlesnake in your sleeping bag? And the answer is absolutely not. Because if you do, and you later climb into the sleeping bag, what's the snake going to do? It's going to bite, because it's a rattlesnake. Now, can you do business with a rattlesnake? And the answer is yes. You just have to hold them differently, metaphorically speaking, in a way in which they can't bite you and in a way in which you don't hurt them. It's not a pleasant way to do business, but it can be done that way. I don't recommend it in very many circumstances. It might be where you're buying a property or something and you're dealing with someone and you're going to deal with that rattlesnake and you know that's what you're dealing with. So don't be surprised when something happens. Just be wise. Because once we have accurate information, we can act appropriately and wisely. So that's the second piece. So first, be the one who is practicing agape love, stepping into the other person's world. That can be very hard to do. There are times when I'm tried. I haven't done it. I just can't get there. What is being said is so hurtful, so inappropriate, that you just can't go there. You just need to get away from the situation long enough to just let all the fear dendrites settle in your brain and all the cortisol is coursing through your body. Because what actually happens when someone does something like that, they say something caustic, and it's a door. And it would be nice if we were all perfect and we could say, oh, well, tell me more about that, or share with me what you're thinking, and we could be calm. The truth of the matter is, if someone says something that's really vicious, it can ignite chemicals in our body that impair our ability to act that way. Yeah, the sympathetic nervous system will release cortisol, and you go, feel anxious. Your amygdala, your fight or flight center, starts shutting down your common sense and your empathy, the very thing we need to centralize it in a place to flee or fight. And all we want to do is fight or flee. That's not a good time to try to be conscious. This is one reason why right now we're reading scroll number 2. To be as prepared as we can in every circumstance, to as much as we can and as often as we can, show up with agape love. If you can imagine a ladder climbing up on a plateau, climb up on the plateau and look down at the civilization. It doesn't mean that you're better than. It just says you've got a clearer vision of. Not better than, just better vision of. And you can see perhaps more of the moving parts. Well, some might say, well, why is it my job to be up here? Well, because you're aware. Because you're aware. They may not know the secret of controlling their mind. You do. This isn't always about expediency. Sometimes it's about life experience. And when we have the patience to climb up the ladder, stand on the plateau, and see more clearly, we can actually learn lessons. It has been my experience that when I'm conscious enough to do this, fewer are the challenges in life. Because we're just more capable in more situations. So you're aware. Agape love requires that you step back and you listen. Fourth, when you're hearing something really caustic, it's really helpful if you can find out more information so you can better understand why. Now, some can make it deeply personal. That's really hard. But in this next step, as you are stepping into their world and listening, you're gathering more information so that you can more accurately and wisely and appropriately respond. Now lastly, since this isn't about naive kindness, it is about kindness, but not naive kindness. Boundaries are appropriate. And there are times when things need to be said clearly. What you want to ask yourself is, are you angry? clarity and anger generally don't go together. I was talking to Rob Peters, who's at our office this afternoon. Rob's a licensed clinical social worker. And he said, three questions that I always ask is, what I'm about to say true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? See, boundaries aren't our view of right, wrong, win, lose. It's just because we think it's inappropriate doesn't necessarily mean that's the boundary. We want to step back and say, is what I'm about to say true? Is it kind and is it necessary? Really necessary? To either move this project forward, to close this deal, to make this business run, whatever it might be. Keep this relationship alive. If you go to this piece and you must speak, here are the rules. You speak without anger, and you immediately begin to show an increase of love, so that they do not view you as their enemy. You do not need to have enemies. Now, my wise wife, Ramona, one day we were talking, it wasn't that long ago, I said, sweetheart, what are some of the greatest things you've learned in life? And she said, I've learned that not everybody likes me, and I don't have to like everybody. Now, if you know Ramona, you know everybody loves her. I've never heard her say a harsh thing about anyone. She's the best grandmother and was an amazing mother. Kind, gentle. But what great advice. There may be some situations where you'll need to speak clearly. Not with anger, but clearly. What does it mean to show an increase of love? You must make sure that when you're speaking clearly, you are not attempting to destroy someone, to get even with them, to get revenge. It is just clarity. And then immediately begin to show an increase of love. That's respectfulness. That's kindness. That the words you use, the emails you write, the phone calls. Number five. Keep your commitments in every way. This is also a way of showing an increase of love. Keep your commitments. If you promise something to someone at a certain time, then you pay it, or you do it. That's a commitment. Whatever you do, don't give someone who's angry ammunition for being more angry just to make a point. The only point you make when you withhold a commitment is a question about your own integrity. Lastly, I know a situation with a partner who owned millions of dollars of real estate with me. This was before internet and texting and emailing. And the whole world fell apart for both of us. He was very angry. I was devastated. He decided to attack me. And he spent $250,000 with his attorney doing that, auditing the books of everything. I was so excited to discover not a penny was missing anywhere. Everything had been done exactly like I told him it had been done. Everything was accounted for. Everything. But yet the battle raged. One day I was sitting in a class about accountability. Interesting topic. Ramona and I were in this seminar together. And in the middle of this seminar, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Oh my goodness. For all these years in this battle, it's been going on like for 3 or 4 years. I had never taken accountability for my piece. Well, I wanted to blame the economy. I wanted to blame everything else. And that was all true. All true. But did not take accountability for the part I did. the decisions I made. I came out at the lunch break and got on the phone and called him. Back, you know, the bricks weren't even out in the cell phones back then. You know, I called him on a payphone at his doctor's office, and I asked for him. We were only supposed to talk through attorneys, so he reluctantly came to the phone, fortunately. He says, what do you want? I said, I'm going to give you the information to bury me. Give you the information to bury me. And so I told him. When the economy was going well, and everybody was excited about this, we had all the profit centers in the real estate development, construction, management, the real estate, everything. All of the profit centers were covered. When the economy started to go south, this was 1988, when it started to go south, it was impossible for me to cover every one of those. I don't know if I could have saved us some money. I just know I had too many hats to wear. I did the best I could, but I just couldn't do it all. I can remember that moment because he simply said, the hatchet is buried. I've been waiting 4 years to hear you say that. I thought, oh my goodness. My lack of accountability, wanting to blame everything else but me for what I'd done, had cost me 4 years of hell. 4 years. I watched a heart melt like under the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. Instantly, by Christmas that year, his family was at our home in Utah from California for a Christmas ski trip. I helped two of his children get into some special schools to take care of some issues they were dealing with over the years to come. And a friendship was mended from the worst, horrible circumstance. So let time be your advocate. Keep your commitments. When it was all said and done, he commented on this. How over all those years, the only person he could call and trust was me. Now, isn't that interesting? Every other person in his life had ripped him off, including his accountant. His accountant had embezzled from him, then borrowed from him and never paid him back. I was the only guy, retrospectively, that he could trust, but he could not see it in his anger. Let time be your advocate and your ally. So let us not, when we're stepping into someone's world, listening for a door, if we can. Sometimes it's really hard because when we get tired and we're overwhelmed and we got a lot of stuff going on and time frames are getting shorter, deadlines are coming, all kinds of stuff can be happening. I'm as guilty as the next. When someone gets caustic and toxic, it's hard. It's really hard. But if you can in that moment, step back for a moment and say, this moment does not make up the world. This is not the end of everything. This is just a moment. This person may not know the secret of controlling their mind. I will give them today the right to be angry and frustrated and even personal. Because tomorrow they'll change and they'll be a delight to be with. If you can do that in those tough situations, it's been my experience that following the guidelines I just gave you, you will, might take 4 years, I don't know if you want to spend that or not, but if you can invest a little bit of time, not making it something that has to be done today, because when we get into a battle, everybody needs to be right. I know I do. Especially if I really feel strongly that I am, and that makes somebody else more feel more strongly that they are, and pretty soon everybody's in a right-wrong battle. That does not work. So we step back from that, and that's the last thing I'm going to share with you. When one of those moments happens, it's best not to engage. It's best to say, I love you. Just love you. And this is not gonna serve either one of us. Could we talk about this tomorrow or day after tomorrow or whenever? And give everybody a chance to calm down. Because we all, right now in today's economy, are under extreme stress. Extreme stress. We're seeing things happen that just want to make your skin curl. I don't think I shared this last week because I think it happened on Wednesday night on the way down to, maybe it was, I'm trying to remember the day that I was going down south. I was following a trailer. If I've told you the story, bear with me, but I was following a trailer and the right rear tire blew. It started smoking heavily and a spark started to come out. And everybody kept passing this person. He's trying to get over on the right shoulder, and he's in the left fast lane, and cars kept passing him like, good grief, guy, can't you speed up? I got places to go. And finally a truck saw it and moved over, turned on his blinkers, and made room for the truck and trailer to move over one line. And then I moved over, and then another one and another, and we finally got them worked off the road. The people were so preoccupied with what was going on in their lives. They couldn't see somebody in crisis. I know I can get like that at times. So let us expect just a little bit more tension right now. Let us expect people in crisis acting a little bit more rudely. Let's expect it. Let's be prepared for it as best you can. Now, when you step into that door, a door is just an opening in their wall. It's a hint about what's going on behind there. Will you step in with, well, tell me more about that, or share with me what you're thinking? And once we're inside, we just continue to listen for doors. Remember I said we leave our garbage, our baggage on the right hand, and our agenda on the left, like they're two suitcases, and we set them on the porch. We walk into their world free of either. We're really going to go in and find out what's happening, because we actually care. This isn't manipulation. This is actually caring. Now, we stay in that world and we begin to listen. Is there anyone on the call who had an experience doing this piece of it this week that would like to share with us? And if you did and you'd like to share it, just press *6 to come off of mute so that we can hear you. Did anybody notice something that was important to a person, like in a restaurant or a bank? Anybody have that experience this week? What a quiet group tonight.
Hi, Dave. This is Mickey. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Very good. I did have an experience, I think it was the other day, Saturday. I was getting my hair cut, and the woman that was cutting my hair, I noticed right by her scissors and everything else in the barbershop, she had a book, a nursing book, like she's studying to be a nurse, and so I inquired about that, and I'm like, oh, is that your book? And she said, yeah. And I said, oh, what are you studying? You know, I just started having a conversation with her about, you know, what she's involved with and what she's studying. And it instantly, she definitely shifted and got more excited and more interested in the conversation that we were having right away, because she was obviously very passionate about her studying to be a nurse. And then I asked even further, so what field are you most interested in, as far as why are you studying to be a nurse? What is the, you know, purpose of your goal in going into that direction? And she wants to be someone that assists an anesthesiologist.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the actual terminology.
Nurse anesthetist.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. A nurse anesthetist. That's pretty good.
And, quite a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It was for me, especially just, it was the last conversation I expected to get into while getting my hair cut, but, and then I asked her a question about, well, have you ever been anesthetized? And, like, it really kind of took her, like, nobody probably has ever even asked her that. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but and she didn't get into the details of it, but she said, yes, I was sick. When I was younger, I was sick a lot, and I've had that experience a lot of times. And she then said that, you know, it makes a big difference in the type of people that would anesthetize me, because when you go under, it can be a stressful thing. And so instantly I realized that, oh, she can clearly empathize with these people that she's going to be assisting in getting anesthetized, because she's been there. And then I said, wow, you're going to be an extraordinary person in that field, because you know exactly what it is that they're going through. So in order for, and I explained to her, you know, just exactly what she, you know, being able to empathize with people and stepping into their world, and the fact that that's the career she's choosing to go into, it just lit up her day. You know, it just really did. It was really great. Loved it.
Wasn't and did you say Mickey? Was that correct?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Mickey. Great story. Now, she lit up. How did you feel as you were walking out of this barbershop?
I felt a lot of gratitude for being able to be somebody that can step into somebody's world. I mean, I was grateful for her being the person that she is in the world and going and doing that, but also just really, I was so, you know, grateful for the fact that, you know, I have these types of tools that I can use to communicate and connect with people in a way that I never have before, and it's just really extraordinary.
How fun. Now, were you nervous at all during this conversation? Fearful? Wondering what you're going to say next?
No. I was just noticing the book, and then it went from there.
Just went from there.
Yeah.
Thank you, because so many on the phone, Mickey, have businesses where they need to talk to people.
Yeah.
They want to talk to them and enroll them in their vision, et cetera. And it's like they're scared about, how do I bring this up, and how do I bring that up, and how do I share? And you just gave us the secret. If we may say, you noticed the nursing book.
Yeah, that's all it was.
Now, if you'd have found out in the middle of that conversation that she's just doing hair cutting to try to figure out how to make some additional income, and she was open to some other options, and you happened to be in one of those businesses, do you think you could have opened up a pretty natural conversation about that?
Oh, absolutely, definitely.
Absolutely. Kind of a rhetorical question. But that's how it works. Mickey, perfect example. You're sitting there and you notice. You just notice. So everybody on the phone, this next week, continue this process of noticing. It might be the metaphorical nurse's book sitting on a counter. Whatever it might be, just notice it and strike up a conversation and watch what happens with these people that you're visiting with. Watch their walls come down, their walls of suspicion, their fear, their uneasiness. Watch them freely talk about that which they feel passionate about. And then be conscious when you walk out how you're feeling about your own soul as you're walking out of a place like that, knowing you just fed somebody. You just lifted and built somebody. You just validated another human being. And see if you don't feel better about yourself for having provided that kind of a service. And know this, and Mickey, you can too, that when we live a life like that, there is a power greater than us that starts showing up and starts putting people on our path who can serve us. It just happens that way. But those people aren't put on our path unless that power can trust that we'll notice, we'll open our mouths and step into someone's world. And Mickey, what a great example, because you just kept stepping deeper and deeper, a safer and safer and safer place. That's principle number four. Then we go to principle number five. This principle number five, we just added. We've been teaching intrinsic validation for, I don't know, 10 years, 9 years. And I just added it this last year because I noticed something. I've been pondering this issue for some time, and I had a dream. The dream's in the material, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about this dream because it's so important. In this dream, I'm up on the top of a mountain, and I'm talking to a man who's in an emotional prison. Now, that may sound really bizarre, but it was very vivid. He couldn't leave where he was. And I could look down, and there was the shoreline, and there was a little cove, a little harbor, and there's a little sailboat way down there. And he said, "That's my sailboat. I need to move it, but I don't know where to put it. Would you please move it for me to a safe place?" And I remember saying to him, "I'll do that." And feeling the commitment to really do it. Went down the mountain, got in a sailboat, moved it from harbor to harbor till I found a harbor. And I remember vividly in this dream, I was watching myself do this, which was kind of strange. I'm sitting on the bow, feet on the boat, doing a backflip into the water, thinking this is exactly where I would put my boat. I don't have a sailboat, but if I had one, that's where I'd put it. And I was so excited that I had truly honored him. And so I went back up to the mountain, and he could almost feel me coming. You could see his body relax as I was coming and the energy in which I was there, and I shared with him what I had done to move his sailboat and that it was in a safe place. And he knew it was in a safe place. He could feel it from me. Now, the truth of the matter is, physiologically, we have in our that fight-or-flight center, that amygdala, a thing called a mirror neuron. It's a real high-level radar system. Almost everybody has an overabundance of these with high levels of empathy. And in this example, I can tell it to you physiologically. His mirror neurons were picking up my energy. When Ogg talks about this in scroll number 2, he gives us a very interesting phrase. This is 1968. This is long before mirror neurons were known. He said, "And how will I confront each whom I meet? In only one way. In silence and to myself, I will address him and say, 'I love you.' Though spoken in silence, these words will shine in my eyes." These are all things that impact a mirror neuron. "Shine in my eyes, unwrinkle my brow, bring a smile to my lips, and echo in my voice. And his heart will be opened." People have mirror neurons. They know. You have 200 muscles in your face. It's 2 to the power of P minus 1. So 2, P would be the number, which would be 200 minus 1. That's a few billion different facial expressions that are possible with 200 muscles. Mirror neurons can read every one of them. FBI interrogators, a few thousand maybe, every one of them a mirror neuron can read. Our thoughts leak out on our face. If we're trying to act like we care and we don't, somebody's mirror neurons will know. I knew in this dream that he could read every part of me, and there was no lie about it. I truly had taken his sailboat into a safe harbor. Then I woke up, and I sat there in my bed going, "What in the world was that all about?" And I got this impression. The sailboat represented his dream. Many of you are in the business of helping people's dreams come true. It's so important that once you've been in a person's world and you know their dreams and their hopes, that you try them on as if you're in their shoes and see if what you're about to present will really serve their dreams. If they do, you can, with this level of consciousness and honesty and integrity, which you cannot fake, begin the process of sharing what you would like to share. Their mirror neurons will read it as safe, as true. There's no duplicity, which is double-mindedness, acting one way, saying another, thinking one way and acting another. Everything is congruent. Everything is speaking the truth. Nothing is leaking out in any of those muscles in the face. Mirror neurons are picking up, you're safe. A safe place. place. This is the ultimate safe place if you have a product to sell. Try it on. And don't be afraid to invest time in someone and then find out it doesn't fit them. Don't proceed anyway. That's dishonest. If you know that what you're presenting would not serve their dreams, don't sell them. There will always be another opportunity. I found this experience last week. Amazing human being, wanted to become a coach. When it was all said and done, we had one spot left in our coaching training that we really were looking for the right person. Been really easy to say, okay, you're it, let's go. And we said no. What you really should do is stay where you are and just be coached. Conquer your fears here first. I remember hanging up the phone and looking up to heaven and saying, you can trust me, God. You can trust me. And to know that you can be trusted and are worthy of trust is a great source of healing in your self-esteem. Now, that may sound self-serving to share that with you, but I share it because this particular principle gets so violated and lives get really damaged when it is. It's principle number 5. Make sure what you're about to present truly meets the needs of the person you're about to present it to, or don't do it. Step 6. Is it the right time? We have thought processes that want everything to happen right now. We don't want to wait. Sometimes we don't think we can wait. And so we press forward when we should hold back. At other times, we let our fear dictate and we hold back when we should press forward. This is when you begin to trust your intuition. Is this the right time? The material has several questions for you to explore. Do they just need someone to talk to? Sometimes they just do. Do they need what you have? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Is this enough for today? If it is, they just simply say, there's some things I'd love to share with you. I'd like to ponder them for a day or two. Could we meet on Thursday and talk about them? If you've really, truly built a bridge, you can do that. If, on the other hand, you feel it's the right time, we move to step number 7, which is gaining agreement. That's stepping into someone's world, and you're there, and you say, there are some things I would like to share with you. Would it be okay if I did that? It's basically saying, would you like to come with me over to my world? They say yes, you take them by the hand, you walk out of their world, over the bridge, into yours, you sit them down, and you begin the discussion. When you have this discussion, there are a couple of ground rules. You don't need to share everything in your life with them. If you are selling a product, you only need to share that which is important to them based on what they've shared. What is important? We have people who are ready to buy, and we feel like we're not done telling them what they need to know before they can. You don't need to go that far. This is what's important to them, and here are the answers, unless there's something that needs to be disclosed that they need to be aware of. But don't oversell someone. Share what they need to know. Second, there's exhaustive information in the material about objections. There is a challenge. This 7 principles of intrinsic validation, finding good, what's important, verbalizing it, listening for doors and stepping into someone's world, staying there until the walls come down, trying on their dream, is this the right time, and gaining agreement, is not a linear process. Any time in the process, including step number 7, when a question comes up, we start right back with stepping into their world because we just got a door. And one of the biggest doors we'll get in any process in which we're enrolling someone in our vision, that's selling a product or otherwise, is an objection. Someone raises an objection. Now, I alluded to this last week, but I'll say it very clearly tonight. An objection is not a question that demands an answer. It's a statement that demands a question. I've seen so many sales courses that teach answers to objections. Objections aren't questions. They don't need answers. And when we start giving answers to someone's objection, we are doing just the opposite of intrinsic validation. Matter of fact, it's like slapping someone saying, come on, stupid, get over it. Now, that's a hyperbole, but let us be sensitive. Someone says, oh, I'm really uncomfortable with sales. Oh, you don't need to sell, da-da-da-da, all you do is talk to people, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, answer, throw up all over their wall. And all the work we just did went away. We just lost it. Well, share with me your experience. Step right back into their world. It's like you're in your world sharing, and so you take them by the hand, you walk back in their world and sit down and say, well, tell me what's happened in your world in terms of sharing, in terms of selling. How long have you been dealing with this fear? What kind of challenges has this created for you in your life? Someone finally feels understood. Do you want to hang on to this for a long time, or have you reached a point where you're ready to let it go? I want to hang on to it. Okay. Well, in my business, you won't be able to do my business if that's the case. And you cordially have the conversation. If they say, I'd love to get rid of it. Good. I know this is true, what I'm about to tell you. If you have intrinsically validated them, you have the right to ask them, what has your experience been with me? Well, it's been pleasant, joyful. Does it feel like I'm selling you anything? No. Let me teach you how to honor people. That's the business we're in. The truth of the matter is 98% of the people introduced to like networking and direct sales have such high levels of empathy, they cannot be hammers. They can't. The 1 or 2%, 1% can be, and they do it effectively. But when they think everybody else needs to become one, they violate people. They just violate them. That's a tough subject to have, and I apologize. I don't want to offend anyone. The fact that someone can tear down someone's wall with a sledgehammer doesn't make tearing down the wall right. And some can do it with enough finesse to get away with it. Most people don't have that amount of finesse. If we can honor people for their high levels of empathy and teach them how to love people with agape love, oh, can we create marvelous things. So, step number 7 is not the end. We don't get there and go, look, I've invested an hour with you. I've been very patient in my listening, and it's my turn to talk, dang it. We can sometimes feel that way. But if we're respectful and we get a door, which is an objection, we simply step back in to the door. Well, share with me what you're thinking. What has your experience been? And we honor them. Quite often they can talk themselves through their own objection and feel very validated in the process. On the other hand, you may discover there's an elephant in the room that no one has wanted to address. Maybe they really don't want to do this, and they just have felt pressured, and this is the only way they can figure out to get out of the conversation. Don't pin them in a corner. Acknowledge that's the truth and let them out. You don't want to be just one more chink in their armor, one more notch in their belt to someone from a certain industry who is dishonoring of other people. I believe, for those of you who aren't in that industry, I happen to enjoy the networking and direct selling industry because it just flays people wide open and exposes all their fears. It's just the most amazing self-improvement environment because you can't hide. You have to really push forward and get through your fears. Wonderful business. I just want to make that clear. Well, there's intrinsic validation. Let us begin to practice this. Look for what's important. Verbalize it. Listen for doors. If you get a caustic door, be prepared best you can. If you happen to say something that's hurtful or harmful, just back off as quickly as you can. Regroup. Use those principles I shared with you, particularly about boundaries. And if you need to speak something clearly, make sure it's not with anger. And immediately showing an increase of love so they don't view you as an enemy. The truth of the matter is no one's perfect. Just no one is perfect. We're all human. And we're all getting through this life the best we can. And when we, who understand these principles, can show up more and more healthy and whole, then we can bless the lives of more and more people. We can do what Og literally says, or literally do what Og says in his figurative writing. I will tear down their walls of suspicion and hate, which they built around their hearts, and in its place I will build a bridge. So that my love, my awareness, my willingness to climb up here and see things a little clearer, to give people allowances for their anger and bitterness of today, to love people, to see them the way God sees them, I want that ability to enter their soul. Because once it's in their soul, they can go tear down the walls of suspicion and hate, which built around the next person's heart. In its place, they can build a bridge so that their newfound awareness can enter the next person's soul. Imagine a world of which I speak. And lastly, and I mentioned this briefly last week, don't be concerned about how well you're doing this. The instant you say, tell me more about that, even before that, the instant you start noticing what's important to someone, Mickey, your story tonight was so good. I wasn't sure where you're going. You're going to get a haircut? Man, that just exploded into a wonderful story. I could see this woman. Wow. And then when you went into, have you ever been anesthetized? And a whole nother depth opens up. Wow. Notice what's important. Verbalize it. Listening for doors. Because I can see Mickey just getting this impression. His intuition says, well, ask her if she's ever been anesthetized. Where does that come from? I want you to be open. It comes from your soul, as it did with Mickey. And he asks it, and he goes into a very sacred space in this woman's heart. Yes, many times as a child, and I could tell the differences. Oh, the empathy she will bring. And by sharing that, you never know, Mickey. You might have been dealing with someone that very day who is facing the reality of going to nursing school, facing the economics of trying to get there, not sure how she's going to pay for it. Maybe her boyfriend or husband or parents weren't as supportive. Maybe they didn't really notice how important this really was to her. Maybe she was sitting in a moment of confusion and doubt. Maybe that day she came to work wondering if she could really pursue this. What happens, Mickey, if you happen to be the spark plug that day to reacquaint her with why she's doing it, taking her to places maybe she hadn't even thought about for some time, if ever, and knowing that really is my calling. I'm going to do whatever is necessary. there may be a day when she'll reflect on that conversation with such gratitude to you, and you won't even know. Except for right now, you know in your heart because I just shared it with you. It's been my experience that when those moments happen, they generally do for a reason. Thank you for sharing that. And may we all notice, because the power that governs abundance, partnership's the last piece of this section. If we want that power to be our partner, we will want to start noticing. We'll want to start verbalizing. We'll want to start listening for doors. We'll want to start stepping into other people's worlds. We'll want to strip ourselves of all the reasons why we think we can't or haven't. And experience what Mickey experienced, which was a fearless, free of fear, rich, deep conversation with another human being. It doesn't get any sweeter than that. Thanks for sharing, Mickey. We're at the top of the hour. Boy, this just flew by. This week, I want you all to go do a Mickey experience. Go have a Mickey experience and come back next week to share. I'm going to have some principles to share with you in the area of partnership, because there are some specific things we're going to want to explore. But most importantly next week is going to be your inspiring stories from what will be created from this night forward. They haven't happened yet. Isn't that exciting? They haven't even happened yet. Who could you serve? By noticing. By verbalizing. By listening for a door. Stepping into someone's world. Creating a safe place. Trying on their dreams before you try to give them any advice. Check in to see if it's the right time. Gain agreement before you share. And if objection comes up, just step right back into their world. Create a safe place. And resolve it honorably. And see what happens differently in your life and your business. Now, I'm going to open this up just for a minute. If anybody's got a pressing question that they need to ask before they dive into it for this week, anybody have a question or comment before we wrap up this session?
Dave, this is John in L.A.
Hi, John in L.A.
Hi there. Listen, this is not a question about today's topic, but it is a comment that I must throw in. I was a scholarship recipient and have been through that, and kudos to Chase for hooking me up with Jenny. How in the world did you know to give me Jenny? What wonderful. Yes, what a coach she is, Dave. I'll tell you, that's a stroke of genius in Chase, I'll tell you, to have made that connection. But what I really want to say very quickly here is that during those 8 weeks, is now 10 at this point, that I've been studying these principles, something has stuck. And I can't really put my finger on which of those, but abundance has occurred. It's like the clouds opened up, and it just happened in recent days. I was at a venue. It was a very uncomfortable situation for me, not the kind of thing I would ever really want to do. But someone came up to me, and I actually have a CD set to music, and I've been struggling with what in the world do I do with it? How do I market this? How do I get this out? An individual owns bookstores across America, came up to me and said to me, without me ever saying anything to him except introducing myself, he introduced himself to me. I told him my name. He looked at the signage that I had there, and he said to me, without me throwing up anything, without me saying anything, he said, "Well, John, how can I get your CDs in my stores?" I'll tell you, my mouth probably dropped open. My wife was there. She would know. I don't know. But he said he wants 10,000 of my CDs to put in his stores across the nation. And we finalize the contract tomorrow morning. Now, Dave, if that isn't the windows of heaven opening, I don't know what it is. If that's not the law of abundance coming my way because I have changed somehow, I don't know what it is. I really don't. And I just had to share that. I couldn't not let you know about that.
Oh, bless your heart. First of all, for thanking Jenny, because all of our coaches are amazing, and Chase did an incredible job of pairing people up, and now Chase is on the call tonight, and he's got to be smiling. Thank you for sharing that, and Jenny as well. And you said the words. We haven't spoken those yet. The law of abundance, the law of attraction. When we are showing up in the service of others, we become attractive. When we become whole and complete, we become attractive. And we do attract things into our lives. It works that way. But John, you also know the change had to occur first, and you had to be in action first, and you had to be stepping into the other people's worlds and serving them first, true?
That's exactly right, and I've done that. It was anathema to me to begin with, but 10 weeks have gone by, and things have changed. Thank you, David.
You are so welcome. Anathema is a great word. It's a paradox of the ages. It's confusing. You know, I'm going to serve to get.
Right.
No, you're going to serve. And as we say in the material, we'll close with this tonight. Abundance is not something that we win. Abundance is not something that we seek to receive. It is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. John, what a great story. Oh, what a fun two stories. Mickey, thank you for yours. And John, what a great bookend on the back of this program tonight. Thanks, everybody. Let's come next week. Is everybody going to commit to this? Let's come off of mute. I'm going to take this one moment. Can everybody hear me now? Can speak up, everyone. Just say hi, everyone.
Hi.
Okay, so we can hear everybody. Can we all agree to come next week with a Mickey or a John experience that we'll create from this moment forward?
Yes.
Is anybody else out there that wants to agree? I know we have more than one person on this call tonight. Oh, if you've got any fear about talking to people, Mickey gave you the secret tonight. Notice something that's important to someone else and let them tell you about it. You can be at peace. No more fear. Thanks, everybody, and have a great night. We'll talk with you next Tuesday evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.